Okay, hello everybody. It's nice to get the chance to learn once again. This week, Parshas Vayakhel. So usually these are the years, because it's a leap year, so we have a little bit more time to study some of these parshas in depth, which is very nice. Mirtzah Hashem, the next 2 weeks, I hope to do some Purim Shiurim on during this slot, both next week and obviously the week leading up to Purim. But we have the chance now to learn Parshas Vayakhel. So let's begin. So beginning of Parshas Vayakhel, so we have to remember some of the major themes of Vayakhel, which we'll come back to, is the repetition in Vayakhel and Pekudei from what was in Truma and Tetzaveh. But leaving that aside, the beginning of Parshas Vayakhel is actually about Shabbos. At the beginning of Parshas Vayakhel, the Torah tells us Vayakhel Moshe is called Das B'nei Yisrael, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gathers all the Jewish people together and tells them that you can work Sheishas Yom Te'asim Melacha, you can work for 6 days. On the seventh day, Yilachem Kodesh Shabbos Shabbason LaHashem Kol Oseh Ba Melacha Yumas. From here we learn, and then the Torah ends this little section about the Mishkan. Lo sivaru esh b'chomosh moseichim b'yom haShabbos. So there's a lot here to unpack in just the beginning of Parshas Vayakhel and what we learn about Shabbos. So let's just discuss a few of them. The first is that here the Torah introduces to us this idea of lo sivaru esh b'chomosh moseichim. You can't make a fire on Shabbos. Now we know there are 39 prohibited categories of melachos that one cannot do on Shabbos, and they're all learned from this one about fire. But specifically, just to share a little bit, this aspect itself, before we get into the larger picture of Shabbos, this issue about fire is fascinating because over the course of our history, we've had many arguments between ourselves, those that interpret Torah shebichsav and Torah shebal peh, and those that just believe in Torah shebichsav, known as the tzedukim. And the tzedukim just believe in the written Torah that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu really wanted to give all of those other details, Hashem would have put it in the Torah. So obviously, it was not meant for the Torah Shema Peh is made up. So, for example, when the pasuk says to Lototah Fos Bnei Nacha that we wear tefillin between our eyes, we know that doesn't really mean between our eyes. It really means over here. When the Torah tells us that when it comes to the Yontif of Shavuos, Umimacharatz HaShabbos, it doesn't mean that we celebrate Pesach the day after Shabbos, the Omer, the Sfira. Really, it means they have to, these are all the fights that we have with the Karaites. And this is a major debate because the Karaites translated this pasuk, Lo Sivaru Eish B'chol Mosh Moseichem B'yom HaShabbos, as literal. You cannot have any fire on Shabbos. So what does it mean you cannot have any fire on Shabbos? That means no preset lights, no preset warming drawers, hot plates, urns, anything. Any electricity you cannot have on Shabbos. So obviously that's wrong because we understand Lo Sivaru Eish means that, yeah, I can't start a fire on Shabbos, but of course I can have it for permissible things if the fire was started before Shabbos. And this actually is the reason that in many of our homes on Shabbos day, we eat challah. Why in the world do we, where does challah come from that it's this idea that we're going to have a challah on Shabbos? Because the meaning, when you learn Hilchos Shabbos, you realize that one cannot, you can't obviously cook on Shabbos. That would be a violation of Issur D'Oraisa of Bishul. Can't cook. Okay, now Friday afternoon, it's not a problem to have hot food for Friday night because I can, four ovens, I could have a tripod and I could have coals and I can remove the coals and the heat will keep the food going until I sit down for my Friday night meal. But how are you going to have hot food on Shabbos day? Well, we know you're not allowed to use your oven Shabbos day. So in order to show that the Karaites were wrong, that they're wrong, that you can have fire and you can have heat so long as it was put on before Shabbos, we have this idea of chalent. What does that mean? Chalent, the idea of chalent is that the Mishnah Berurah says, there are people that were machmir and they said, no, we're not going to do anything. We don't want to violate anything. No. We want to go ahead and ensure that we have hot food on Shabbos day. So before the innovations of hot plates and blechs and things like that, you would make a food on Friday afternoon. You'd put it in the baker's oven all Friday night and all day Shabbos, and you'd come and you'd take it out and you would eat that food. Or you'd, I don't know, you'd make your what's called a kira in the Gemara of Shabbos, the Mishnah describes. You would have a lot of coals underneath them. You'd put your pot on them. You'd remove all the coals, and then you'd have hot food on. It would say, heating till Shabbos day. And that's the reason we have hot food on Shabbos day. And in fact, the Mishnah Berurah quotes a poem from the Baal HaMor, Zechariah ben Isaac HaLevi, Gerondi in the 12th century in Spain. But he writes a poem that La'aneg is a Shabbos with a Hashmin. That one who delights in Shabbos, who imamin v'zocher leketzayav, he's gonna have Mashiach. Meaning the idea is that we wanted to show the carrots that they were wrong, so we make sure to have a hot food on Shabbos day. And that was the only way to have a hot food on Shabbos day, was really through a challah and a crack. Separate discussion. So when you eat your challah this Shabbos, you'll feel good about yourself. And you know, if you want to go to former kiddushes, you can say, I'm fulfilling a mitzvah. You have a lot of hot food and you should feel good about how much challah you eat. How you'll feel later is totally up to you. But at least you'll feel good about it when you're actually eating the challah. So this idea, though, of Shabbos leads us to one more point just about the fire. Why is it that of all the 39 melachos, the one melacha that has been, you know, taken out to teach us all the other melachos is that of fire? So there's machlokas between Rashi and the Ramban. Maybe the, you know, Rashi explains, you know, it's its own unit. If you transgress each melacha, right, you would violate each one on their own. There's a lot of different reasons. But Rabbi Tzvi Kanatovsky was a great Rav in New York at MTA. He mentioned Meir Aliyah, brilliant Talmid Chacham, and he published a few essays. He died, unfortunately, at a very young age. He notes an amazing, really unique idea. He says, when Hashem tells Moshe about the Mishkan, right, he lays out all the details that we just learned about the last 2 weeks, and then he adds in Shabbos. Here, well, that's what we learned in Truma Tetzaveh, and we throw in a little bit of Shabbos and Kizisa. When Moshe here starts with, you know, the beginning of Vayakel, it's all about Shabbos, and then you have the Mishkan. So why does Moshe switch? We first had Mishkan, Shabbos, and now we have Shabbos, Mishkan. So he offers the following idea. He says, if you look at what happens between when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to build the Mishkan and now, you have the Egel. What was the eagle made out of? The eagle is made out of fire, which represented man's ability to create. That's what they say. We made this eagle. We created this thing. It was on our own. Fire is man's ability, right, to go ahead and to. That's why we have a fire, Motzei Shabbos. When Adam learns how to make a fire, that's what we do in Motzei Shabbos. So what led the Jews to the eagle is they thought that they had control. After the eagle, Shabbos takes on new meaning. Shabbos is the time that I remind myself that I can't do melacha. I'm not in control. When you make kiddush Friday night, and the Sefer Achinuch explains, you make kiddush Friday night, you add in all these psukim by chulash ba'aretz b'chol tzivam. Why do we do that? Shabbos morning, v'shom b'nei esos the Shabbos. We are reminded of the fact that we are not in control. God made the world. Every one of the 39 melachos that we have, whether it's cooking, separating, kneading, dash, lush, bishul, kosev, all of them, they're all constructive purposes. On Shabbos, we are reminded that I am not in control. And that's what happened in between the Egel and the commandment to build the Mishkan. That initially Hashem tells Moshe to build the Mishkan, and it's Mishkan, Shabbos. But now, when after the Egel, Moshe reminds them, Shabbos is a time where we don't do these things. We're not in control. And then we can learn about the Mishkan. And one other piece about Shabbos and the Mishkan itself. Rav Shimshon Pinkus points out that there are at least he counts. I'm sure there are more if you want to go through it. There's at least six connections between Shabbos and between the Mishkan. First, he says, is that both the Shabbos and the Mishkan forgive a person's sin. The Gemara in Yoma tells us the first base HaMikdash was destroyed. The first base HaMikdash, I'm sorry, is referred to as Levanon. Why? Because it forgives Shemalabim Anoseichem Shal Yisrael. It's Shabbos and the Mishkan forgive a person's sins. When a person says Vayichulu on Friday night, the Gemara tells us that angels put it on their head and say, right, you're forgiven. The second connection one has between Shabbos and the Mishkan is they both have begadim, they both have clothes, right? They both have clothes, right? We have Shabbos clothes, right? We're supposed to dress nicer on Shabbos, and we also have big day, right? The Mishkan, the Kohanim had big day kahuna. And the Gemara connects the close of the Kohen to the close of Shabbos. That's connection number two. Connection number three is the candles. In the Beis HaMikdash, there was a menorah. And on Shabbos, of course, we have for Kavod Shabbos, we have Shabbos candles. Number four, says Rav Pinkus, both the Shabbos and the Beis HaMikdash required cleanliness, preparing oneself. Right? The Shulchan Aruch says you should bathe Erev Shabbos. And if you can, you should at least wash your hands. And why? Same thing like the Beis HaMikdash, we're preparing ourselves. So you have clothes, you have preparation, you have candles. Says Rav Pinkus, the fifth connection is the Shulchan. The Shulchan had the Lechem Apanim, and on Shabbos, we have a Shabbos table. Every week, we sit down to a beautifully set Shabbos table, reminding ourselves about the Beis HaMikdash. And finally, says her pink is an amazing idea. The smell, the ketores. In the Beis HaMikdash, there was something that had a ketores. You could smell the beautiful smells of the ketores. Right? When we have, the Gemara in Yuma tells us that the smell was so potent and so powerful that women wouldn't need to put any perfume because you could just get the ketores. Shabbos, right? Every house has a Friday Erev Shabbos smell, right? It's hopefully not a burnt smell and an angry smell, but it's a smell of food, of chicken soup, of getting ready, of challah. There's a smell. There's a certain scent to the experience of Shabbos. So says Reb Pinkus, great. What do I do with all of these connections? So he says it's actually pretty simple. Why did the rabbis find so much connection between Shabbos and the Beis HaMikdash? Because by associating the Beis HaMikdash with Shabbos, we're reminding ourselves what Shabbos is all about. Meaning, if I were to ask you, what's the Beis HaMikdash about? Oh, everybody knows. Bring Hashem into the world, to connect him, to be inspired, to become a better Jew. But sometimes we don't share that same sentiment with Shabbos. We talked about this last week in Kisisa. Maybe because we're used to it happens every week. We don't have the same experience of Shabbos. Shabbos is not a time off. Shabbos, the goal of Shabbos really is to connect with the Ribono Shel Olam. So much what we do on Shabbos, so much is to attempt to recreate the Beis HaMikdash experience that we, thank God, get the privilege of doing every week. So the beginning of the Parsha in Parshas Vayakel is all about Shabbos. One of our fights against the Karaites and the beauty of our halacha is number one. Number two is the connection that we feel with the Shabbos experience itself. Why Moshe puts it in the beginning of Parshas Vayakel and then talks about the Mishkan. But really the goal of recreating that sense, the experience of the Beis HaMikdash almost on a weekly, ongoing basis. Okay, but then you leave Parshas, the beginning of Vayakel, which is about Shabbos, and you get into things that you said, hey, wait a second, I learned this a while ago. In Parshas Truma, I learned all about the building of the Mishkan. Why is it repeated? Right? And this is a question that is asked by many Rishonim and many Parshanim. Why is it that we just said one Milacha of Shabbos is quoted while the other 38 that we experience on a weekly basis? You have to know them. They only appear through learning from the other one. Yet the building of the Mishkan is repeated in its full detail. Four Parshios, Truma, Tetzava, Vayakel, and Pekudei. So some explain that the point of the repeat, it's a fascinating opinion and not as well accepted opinion by the Ralbag. The Ralbag explains that was the writing of the times. Hey, it's a certain text, some are repeated, some are not repeated. It's a very, very unique opinion. It's not necessarily accepted as the mainstream. And the Ramban explains, no, it's a point of endearment that Hashem is showing his love to the Jewish people. This is his house. This is the Asudli Mikdash V'shachanti B'socham. Make for me a house and I'll bring my Shechina and you'll connect with me. So in showing how much Hashem cares about it, Hashem repeats all of those details. Rav Hirsch explains, no, every one of the Kalim of the Mishkan had its own purpose. And there are certain things we learn, as we'll talk about in a minute, that appear here that do not appear in Parshas Teruma. But Rav Aaron Lichtenstein explained, it's actually pretty straightforward. What's happened between the commandment of Vayakel and Pekudei and Truman Tetzaveh? And that is, the Jewish people, in a sense, they cheated on God. Kadosh Baruch Hu took them out of Mitzrayim, did all the makos, Kriyas Yamsa, brought them to Har Sinai, gave them the Torah. The entire existence of the Jewish people had been to get the Torah. So it was slavery, and we needed the slavery, and we came out of the slavery. We finally culminated at Kadosh Baruch Hu, gave us the gift that the world was created for. And then what did we do with it? We made a God. Whether, as we spoke last week, it was a real Avodah Zarah, an intermediary, whatever it was Avodah Zarah. That is us cheating on God with another being. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is furious and he wants to wipe out the Jewish people, and Moshe Rabbeinu intercedes and steps in and saves the day. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to tell the Jewish people, I'm moving back in with you, but I want to start this all again. And to show you how much I care, I'm not just going to say, look back. Go back to what I said in Truma Tetzaveh. That was earlier. We're stripping ourselves of all of that, and this is a new beginning. And it's actually Hashem's way of showing how much he cares about the Jewish people, how much he's willing to forgive them and to restart once again. So that's why Rav Aaron Lichtenstein explains you find this repetition because it's a couple, it's a relationship that it's rebuilding it from scratch. And the beginning of the parsha, we find that just like we heard in Parshas Truma, the word nidiv lev comes up over and over again, to be of a generous, of a giving heart. So what exactly is, what's the purpose as we're all giving? Right, we find a lot about what it means to do chesed and tzedakah from these psukim. What is nidiv lev? So it means generous. But that word comes up three times because Rashi tells us they gave three times. They gave once for the sockets of the Mishkan and everybody gave a half a shekel, no more, no less. They gave the mizbeach, everybody gave. And then finally, for the actual trumas ha-mishkan, they could give whatever they wanted. Why the need for both? Why does Hashem want, in the world of giving, to both give a lot on my own and voluntarily, but also be forced to give? The answer is that there's really two parts to tzedakah. There is the role of the we usually think that tzedakah is the recipient. That the recipient should get X amount of money, whatever that is, whatever it's money, chesed, whatever it is, they're receiving. There's also my role, the role of the donor, right? There's a fascinating halacha. The halacha says, "Omar sela zulit tzedakah, b'shvil sheyichya b'ni o sheyeh ben olam haba." If a person gives money to tzedakah and he says, "I'm giving this money on condition that my children are big tzaddikim or that I get olam haba," it's all great. Still works. Tzaddik gamor. Now, try that with any other mitzvah, right? I'm only shaking the lulav on condition that I'm going to be get olam haba. You don't make conditions like that. The word tzedakah, which often, colloquially is translated as charity, is the wrong word. Charity is charity, meaning it's my money, but I am a charitable person, and I will give you some of my money, or I'll give you some of my resource, whatever it may be. Tzedakah means just. Tzedakah is that I am given things by the Ribono Shel Olam. They are not mine. And I want to realize that and actualize that understanding, so I want to give that away because it's not really mine. Tzedakah is broader than just where it gets to. So first, there is a message of you had to give. But you had to give half a shekel, no more, no less. Right? But the message, though, also is that I have to get rid of some of my stuff because it's not really mine. The objective need is to get the money where it has to get to, but the subjective lesson is what does it mean to me that I have to part with the money that I've earned? And I feel it's rightfully mine. I might have shown in the past an amazing story of Chaim Volozhin. When Chaim Volozhin was raising money for his yeshiva, he came to the town of Minsk and he went to raise money. And there were stood two very, very wealthy individuals, and they told him he was collecting 50,000 rubles, or whatever the amount is. If you want to know, by the way, how much rubles are, you can go. You go into Google, currency exchange, and there's rubles still there. With $1, you can make a lot of rubles. So after about a month, one of the guys gives him 25,000. And the next one, the same guy gives him another 25,000. So, okay, he goes back. He has the money. He goes back to his town. He's called back. Rav Chaim Volozhin is called back to this town to sit at a Din Torah. There was a case in front of the Beis Din. What happened? These two partners that were supposed to give Rav Chaim Volozhin all of this 50,000 rubles, the end, one guy actually gave 50,000. And the partner, what a story, by the way, the partner is upset that I didn't get a chance to get the schus of giving money. Okay, now, first of all, that's an amazing story already. That one guy said, I thought I was out 25 grand, and some guys, that was me. I'd be like, oh, I just made $25,000. I used to tell my father all the time when I went to camp, I never forget, when I went to NCY Kollel, my father gave me a certain amount of money. And when I came back and he said, is there leftover money? So at first I told him, why would there be leftover money? You gave me an amount of money and I spent it all because that's what you're supposed to do. And second of all, I told him, and my father happens to be a CPA. I told him, I made money. How did I make money? Well, if we went out to dinner with a bunch of guys, I paid on the credit card. So I used your credit card and I got all their cash. So I actually made a lot of money. So he didn't really agree that was a good money-making approach. But nonetheless, right, this guy was upset that he didn't get a chance to join in the 50,000 rubles. Okay, so whatever the case is. And Rav Chaim Volozhin then turns to this guy and says, I don't understand. If you had the 50,000 rubles, why did you wait until I left a month after I was there to give me the 50,000 rubles? If you were going to do it on your own, you should have done it the first week and I could have got back to the yeshiva where I'm supposed to be. So Rav Chaim Volozhin explained, the guy told Rav Chaim Volozhin, he says, you're right, but you don't understand. It wasn't easy for me to part with my money. And every day I had to say, I know this isn't mine. I know this isn't mine. And then I took a little bit of what it was and I set it aside. And it took me a month till I was finally ready to part with those 50,000 rubles. And that's really this idea of truma and a nediv lev. Yes, we have to give because it has to get where it has to get to. But I also have to make sure that I understand that I'm giving what's not really mine. And by the way, the reason that, why is it that in all of these mitzvos, right, we don't make brachos. You don't make a bracha when you do something that is ben adam lechaver, right? You give tzedakah, like in this example, why don't you make a bracha? So the simple answer is, well, the person might not accept it, right? I give a guy 50,000 rubles and he says, I don't want it. So if I said, right, no saying tzedakah, and the guy's like, sorry, I don't want your money, that would be a bracha levatala. Okay. It also is, the Sri Deish points out, Rachel Yaakov Weinberg, a great rav in the Warsaw ghetto, explains, because you don't want somebody to feel like they're your lulav. Thank God you're poor. Thank God you're sick. I can come visit you. Baruch atah Hashem, asher katsanu, levakar chole, leno sein tzedaka. The goal is also that I understand a certain sensitivity and a certain understanding of being be'adam lechaver. So this idea of nediv lev, of giving, is the same reason we find a fascinating thing that happened. Moshe Rabbeinu is collecting all this money. Moshe Rabbeinu relays the message, and it's pasuk says, "Vayomer el Moshe lemer marbi ma'am lahavi midei la'avod." That they brought so much, and they had too much. Imagine that, by the way. Imagine a cause match campaign where the email goes out, and the email doesn't say, "Bonus round, we're almost there, 75, 90, 95." Where the email comes out after 3 hours of the campaign, and the email says, Shkoyach, we did it. Please do not send any more money. We do not want your money. If you know an organization like that exists, please let me know. Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, Vayitzav Moshe Vayaviru Koba Machane, Leimar Ish V'Isha, Al Yasu Od, don't bring any more. L'Melach L'Trumas HaKodesh, Vayikoli Ma'al Melavi. Says the Sfas MS. 1 second. Why do I have to know that they brought too much? Meaning, either way, either they brought too much, that they had enough, or say, we have enough, which would have meant that there is not, they don't need any more. Says the Sfas Emes, a beautiful answer. The Sfas Emes explains, let's realize where we are. We got the Torah, a moment so rich and so powerful that the Meshech Chachma says their souls flew out of their body, that they witnessed the miracles of Mitzrayim and create, like we said before, and a few days later they have the Egel Azav. And as a result of the Egel Azav, not only are they punished, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm very displeased. I'm going to wipe you out. Right? I'm going to wipe you out. Moshe Rabbeinu, we'll start a new nation together. And after all of that, Moshe Rabbeinu davens, but it's all not back to normal. Meaning, Hashem, even though he won't wipe out the Jewish people, Hashem still removes his Shekhinah. The reason we built the Mishkan, Hashem says, I'm taking away my Shekhinah. And it sits outside the camp. After being thrown aside, Hashem says, I'm giving you one more chance. So the Jewish people seize the moment and they begin to donate like you have never seen before. That you can't refresh the page. And as you search for who gave and what ambassador page and the highest gift, it can't keep up. Their website crashes. So not only that, the Jews are so excited that the Nesiim, right, the leaders of each of the Shvatim decide the first they're not going to bring. Right, we'll wait to see. You know, we're doing this big Siyum in a few weeks on Shabbos Parsha Zach, where we're going to complete Masechtas Megillah together during Shalosh Shudas. So Rabbi Goldstein asked recently, the rabbis have to sign up. So first I said, let's wait, and whatever's left, we'll sign up for it. And he says, yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. Everybody's going to sign up, and then we're going to look like the fools that didn't sign up. So they don't even donate. They don't even realize the sincerity of their people, the generosity of their hearts, of their spirits, to give and give and give and give. Moshe Rabbeinu says the Sfas Emes is seeing this scene unfold in front of him. You can't count the donations fast enough. And he has a choice to make. Either he could say, let him give and let him give and let him give and let their passion and their love just run wild. Or he could say, let them stop. Moshe Rabbeinu had a larger idea in mind. Ish v'ish al yasur says, right now, I want you to stop. Why right now? Because Moshe Rabbeinu stops them in the middle of their rushing, in the middle of that feeling of how good it felt to give and to give. Moshe Rabbeinu says, that feeling, that's what I want you to understand. That's what chesed feels like. That's what tzedakah feels like. You should feel that sense, not just then, but for all of eternity, that when these psukim are stated, there is so much to give. Moshe said no more. He stops at a time when they had much more to donate, when their pockets are being weighed down with jewels. He says, you see how it feels? That's always the feeling that it should be when you do chesed. Whenever you do it, it should be with this understanding that you want to keep giving and giving. And the truth is, by the way, part of the, you know, this Shabbos, just realize this Shabbos is Parsha Shkalim, right? So Parsha Shkalim, which we just read last week, that when the, you know, when it comes to karbanos, people can give on their own, private karbanos, sins, celebrations, akaras, tov, tumah, tahara, whatever it is. And there is public karbanos, like the karban tamid, karban musaf. So how did the community pay for that? Everybody gave a half a shekel. And that money was collected by the first of Nisan. So this Shabbos, which is the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Adar, which is when they would collect all the half a shekels, they reminded them. So right, we know the half a shekel was given. The pasuk says the kofer nafsho, to be a you know, some type of atonement. So why in Adar? So the Sfas Emes there as well says the following. Sfas Emes explains the general idea of half a shekel was that a sense of achdos and togetherness. Me half a shekel, you half a shekel, Rav Shechter half a shekel, my students half a shekel. Everybody's equal. But it wasn't just achdos. The idea of kofer means forgiveness, and it appears three times in the Torah. In an ir miklat, if a person's animal killed somebody else, it's my responsibility. It's my responsibility. When the Torah is well aware that when we're busy, even with very good intentions, we do a lot, right? Well, sometimes we forget about communal obligations. So once a year, we come together and we give a half a shekel. We're reminded about our responsibilities to that seabor. And the Sfas Emes says that's why specifically in the month of Adar. Adar is like a tshuva time. It's Elul, but it's different Elul. Rosh Hashanah is more nerves and fear and pachad and ema. What's going to be? Mi yichya, mi yamos, barash, betzama, misana tokev. So how do I prepare for that Yom HaDin? With tshuva and learning. And this is also an Elul, Sfas Emes says, but it's a different tshuva. The new year is going to start with Nisan. And it's all about chesed, about giving to one another. That's the karma beisa, halach ma'anya. It's all about bringing people in. So how do we get prepared for that? Half a shekel, matanas levyonim, mishloach manos. All of these half a shekel are things that I did that really, really connected with me, that connected me with my tzibor. It was a common identity campaign. Everybody gave this, you know, this half a shekel, which speaks to this idea, not only of nidiv lev, but really this idea of what does it mean, you know, really what does it mean, to give and to give appropriately. So they stopped. Moshe Rabbeinu stops the Jewish people at that moment to tell them, no, let me realize how you feel right now. So because I mentioned earlier that part of Parshas Vayakel is something a little bit different. So I'll share with you just one piece before we conclude. I'll do two pieces. One is about the Kiyor itself. But we learn about the Kiyar a little bit more in this week's Parsha. And the Torah tells us that this Kiyar was made with certain mirrors, with Maros HaTzavos, the mirrors from the women that they, you know, they had these brightly polished sheets of copper that they used for their mirrors. What are these mirrors? So one explanation speaks to the source of these mirrors. The Medrash tells us that in a desperate situation, the Jews in Mitzrayim, right, very much you find the same things in the DP camps. It was so bad, they felt that, and then the Shoah itself. So morally low that they didn't want to have children, right? Even Moshe Rabbeinu's parents separated. And the women had faith and they had hope and they would, in the middle of the fields, visit their husbands and they would, in a certain sense, really seduce their husbands to continue to have children. And that those were these mirrors. And in fact, when they come to Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, we can't take those. That's not appropriate. And Hashem says, absolutely. That's a feeling of hope. You know, we have this a lot. We find this, for example, Pesach. So Pesach, the charoses, that we eat, the charoses that we eat. So the Gemara says that has two opinions. One of the opinions is that it should be paste-like, okay, like slavery and bitterness and hard work, bricks. And one opinion is that it should have apples. Why apples? Because the women, when having these babies, they went out to the apple trees with the mitzvah, couldn't hear them to have the babies. That's one idea of the mirrors. But Rabbi Soloveitchik says the following. Rabbi Soloveitchik says, every morning the Kohen Gadol would come and look at himself in the mirror, And you know, prepare himself. It seems a little bit strange. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, no. He's not doing it to see how he looked physically, but to be self-aware. Now, Daniel Kahneman, for example, was a Nobel Prize-winning psychologist, author of some great books, an Israeli leading psychologist, explains, self-awareness is who I am as a person. My strengths, my desires, my weaknesses, what makes me tick, what bothers me. The more that I know about myself, the better I am at adapting to life's challenges. This, said Rabbi Soloveitchik, self-awareness is what's happening. He's not looking, how's my hair? Who am I? Am I doing it with the right motives, with the right approach? It was becoming self-aware, something that we don't like to do, to really look at myself in the mirror, figuratively and literally, and to say, who am I as a person? What am I good at? What am I working on today? What do I want to improve at? What relationships can get better, whether it's my spouse, my children, friends, neighbors, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What are things that really need, that I'm good at, and things that I could get better at? And that's really what the Kohen then would enter the Avoda. First, he took stock of himself. No one's perfect. And then he went ahead. So I'll just end with the following to give sort of a larger picture to Parshas Vayakel. There is this debate between Moshe and Bezalel about how to build the Mishkan. That Moshe Rabbeinu tells about building the Kelim and then building the Mishkan. And Bezalel says, no, 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 that's not what we do in the world. Minhag Shel Olam, we got to build the structure. And then we put other stuff in. And finally, Moshe Rabbeinu, like, goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hashem, says, no, Bezalel, Kel, Bezalel is right. And Moshe says, great, we'll do it that way. What exactly is his argument about? Moshe Rabbeinu spends a tremendous amount of time on Har Sinai. Right? We know in last week's parsha, the end of last week's parsha, we learned about the mask of Moshe Rabbeinu. One of the sources for that masva that he gets is that he just spent days radiating, literally, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's why one of the sources say that when Moshe comes down, he's radiating into Yom Kippur. Right? When we sit with the Ribono Sholem, all Yom Kippur, we get a sense of radiance from us. So Moshe Rabbeinu has, and up there in discussing all of these things, you can for sure understand that Moshe, the Aron, the Mizbeah, the Shulchan, they each represent a beautiful connection and a meaning and a message. And Moshe Rabbeinu sees within those an endless source of spirituality and ruchnius. He isn't bothered by where the Kelim are going to go, because the Ein Yaakov explains. Moshe saw them as spiritual entities, not limited by space. He saw their raw spirituality. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down. He told Moshe as the architect. So he says, okay, Moshe, he tells Bezalel as the architect. Bezalel, we got to build the Aron and the Mizbeach. And Bezalel says, no, no, that's not the Minhag Shel Olam. Bezalel is different. After hearing about the Kelim, Bezalel is bothered. Yes, Moshe Rabbeinu on the mountain with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one thing. But Kedusha doesn't just show up in a vacuum. You cannot just produce, Kedusha out of thin air. Kedusha needs a certain context to it. You need to prepare for it. So he turns to Moshe and he says, Pach Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no, Moshe. Is that really what Hashem says? Also, Mishkan Aron v'Kelim. We have to put them somewhere. Bezalel's perspective was, we are working towards Kedusha. Creating that space is also Kedusha. Is also Kedusha. And it makes a lot of sense. Because we mentioned that according to one school of thought, the Ramban and others, the Egel comes as an atonement for the Mishkan comes as an atonement for the Egel. When the Jews made a mistake in the sinning of the Egel Azav, their mistake was they confused means and ends. They thought, I don't care how we get to spirituality, we're just going to get there. So we'll build an Egel. God didn't ask it. I don't care. And I'm not worshiping it as an idol. I'm worshiping HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But I'm going to make the Egel to get me there. So as an atonement, Hashem says, build the Mishkan, create the structure, create the surface, create the context, and then put it in. In the end, they're not arguing. It's just two different perspectives that are no way mutually exclusive. That yes, we have moments in which a ne'ilah, a kumzitz, a davening, a learning that might sort of sweep us off our feet and create that spiritual, spirituality out of nowhere. But also, most of our lives, we have to create the right context of which to put the spirituality into it. So this a little bit, as a recap, is a little bit about Parshas Vayakel. First, the introduction of Shabbos, the uniqueness of Shabbos, the special role that Shabbos plays, the connection to, not just against the Karaites, but to the Mishkan and Shabbos, all those themes of Rav Pinkus, the idea of giving and donating with a full heart, donating voluntarily and obviously being told what to do. The notion of, Parshas Shkolim tied into this, to this giving. And then this idea of the Kiyar and then the Machlokas between Moshe and between Bezalel. So again, Amir Tashem, the next few weeks,